Yeah, I'm writing a lot.
Well, yeah, I'm sorry to hear that, but I'm excited for you.
I mean, I appreciate that, like, other people do their job a lot, too. And maybe I'm really peeling back the curtain here when I say I really only do my job a lot when I have to. So
yeah, I think, you know what, I appreciate that, but I would be a disaster if I, you know.
I am a disaster, Jen, as you know. Everyone, I have a book due, and I have this very bad way of doing my job that I don't recommend, where I do all the work at the end.
Yeah, you do.
And, you know,
I think I've said this before.
Some people do all the work along
a little bit of the time. Yeah. I remember the first year that we were friends and you did this, and I was like, oh boy, she's just so slammed. And then the next year I was like, oh, self-inflicted.
Right. Exactly. And, you know,
then I was like, sympathetic, but in a different way.
When Eric was very young, he did a lot of, he worked in tech support, which seems like it would be, you know, terrible.
Terrible.
In general, just a lot of like telling people to reboot their computer. And apparently there is a tech support term called PEBCAC, and it means problem exists between keyboard and chair.
Yes.
And I often think about it when I'm this deep in a book, like, oh, the problem exists between the keyboard and the chair. So anyway, shout out to everybody who does tech support for like a real job all the time, because that seems hard.
I'm always so embarrassed. My tech guy at work is amazing, like the nicest person ever. His name's Mike. I feel like they're all named Mike. And I literally am always like, Mike, like, listen, you know, my projector's not working in my room or whatever. And, you know, he'll come in. And of course, just his presence immediately fixes it.
Yeah. Or my favorite is, well, when I was in college, I did a study abroad, but it wasn't abroad. It was at the Smithsonian. And it was amazing. I had this great experience. But like, as you all now know, I do not do the work like a little bit at a time. I write papers all the way at the end. Like, I mean, I have always been this way. Like, there are just people. By the way, everyone, if you also work this way and like beat yourself up about it, I hear you and I do the same thing. But I actually took this like really fascinating like class with somebody who is sort of designed. She's a woman who like helps you sort of sort out your work process, like how you work and understand better how your brain and like work process work together. And she said that we just like, she was basically like, Sarah, this is how you have always worked for, you know, 30 years. This is not changing. Like, this is your system. And so you have to like, first things first, like put out of your mind all of the self criticism that this, like, this is the system and it works. It's just, you know, painful at the end. Anyway, so I was like, 2 days, I had this massive like project. Like, it was the single project of the whole thing. Like, at the end of the Smithsonian semester, you have to produce an item. And it was like 2 days before it was due. I was like pulling all nighters, which I can no longer do. That is the one thing I'm no longer able to do. And I spilled a cup of coffee at 2 o'clock in the morning on my laptop. And it just died.
And grief rained.
I had like a 200 to 300 page document on this laptop that was like the deliverable.
Sure.
So I took it to like help center or us, like,
right,
this was
something, right?
You know, you the break, 90s. We fix. So like it was whatever. Yeah, exactly. It was like the one guy in Washington, D.C. who knew what to do. And, you know, exactly the question he asked me, which is, did you back up?
And you were like, what?
Oh, motherfucker, I didn't.
Why do you think I'm here?
Like, also, this is my thing. They always ask.
Yeah.
And it's like, because they want to shame you. Anyway, I did get that back. He did help me, for what it's worth. I should not have called him that. That wasn't very nice. But like the truth is in the moment in that question. But he did actually rescue the data, and he did. I was able to turn in the project.
You know, I am that way as well. I don't know if I'm quite as bad, but pretty much. And if I was writing books, I'd definitely be that way. And the thing I now say to myself, and it's true, is like it always gets done. Right? It always gets done.
That's true. I spend a lot of time going, this time next year, this book is out.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Like these grade reports get written, right? Like these, you know, these books get edited. So I think that there's a way in which I have like realized that like I do. I always get everything done. I don't miss deadlines. So,
yeah. I mean, I will also say, and I've talked about this on the podcast too, but like revision for me is so much where the magic happens that like, I mean, I still worry obviously about the first draft a lot, but like, I also know like the second pass is where this book is really going to sing. So I do spend a lot of time texting Kate and going, what if I've lost my talent? Sure. Anyway, speaking of Kate,
well, maybe we should introduce ourselves first, Sarah.
Oh, welcome to Fate of Mates, everyone. I'm Sarah McLean. I read romance novels and I write them.
I'm Jennifer Prokop, a romance reader and procrastinator.
Same.
Speaking of Kate.
Everyone, Fate of Mates Live is coming up. You've heard us talk about it before, but we have not yet talked about who. I mean, we dropped a little like yay thing into the feed, but we know that not everybody listens to them, so we are going to do it now. Joining us on March 23rd, 2024, at the William Vale Hotel in Brooklyn, it's happening, are Kate Claiborne, more than five-timer, friend of the pod, the creator of Not For Kate trademark. She's going to come. There are going to be parts of the night that are not for Kate. It's going to be a blast to watch that happen.
Oh, funny.
Nikki Payne, who now you're all friends with because she was on last week.
2 weeks ago.
Was it? Oh, 2 weeks ago. I don't know what day it is. 2 weeks ago, talking about
renovation romance.
Jane Austen and renovation romance. By the way, I did see your tweet, and we're not going to discuss it about Darcy, but I will say you are on the record for never having seen that movie, and you can't judge. Can't judge until you see it.
Totally can judge that doughy-faced white man by all the gifts people put on of him. So many. So fucking many of that man's face. And I'm just like, he looks like a drowned rat. I don't get it.
Listen, I love that man very much. He's also in Ripper Street. He's got like 70 pounds of muscle on him in Ripper Street.
I would probably like him better looking like that.
He wears a hat. He solves crime.
Hat. Okay.
No, well, it's Victorian. I mean, he wears like a bowler hat. I mean, whatever.
Okay, fine.
He's hot. He talks about how he and his wife used to miss church and stay home and fuck. It's great.
Sure, that seems nice. Maybe I would like that. I'm sure I would. This version of him, not so much. Fine.
Leaving that, Nikki Payne, though, is coming to Fated Mates Live. And we can maybe discuss this at Fated Mates Live, but I don't think we will because Jen doesn't like Austin. So that's
fine. It would be fine. Like, everyone else can talk about their favorite Darcy, and I will casually stroll into the bar in the back of the room and get myself a drink while you're all doing your thing and just, like, chat with the people in the back. And we could talk about, like, Reacher or something. And then when you're all done, I'll just, like, stroll back up to the front.
The conversation. Yeah, sure.
I think it's fine.
So that's going to be super fun. And then,
yeah,
Lauren Billings, one half of Christina Lauren.
It's like, I'm so excited.
Flying in to join us for Fate of Mates Live, which is going to be so fun. You all heard Lauren and Jen was sick. And Lauren and I did Hop for Teacher because Jen will never do Hop for Teacher.
No.
Similarly to Hot for Darcy. And
right. NFJ.
So Jen, NFJ, TM. So Lauren is coming in. Are we going to talk about breastfeeding? Maybe.
Who knows? The sky's the limit, right?
Not for Kate, is for Lauren.
See?
We're learning. We don't know where it falls for Nikki, so we'll get there.
Maybe. True. Okay. You know what? It's so funny, everybody, because here's the other thing I'm saying. I am keeping track of, like, some of the conversation on the Discord and some of the conversation on Twitter about it. lots of people are kind of like, it'll be my first time in New York and you are going to have a great time.
New York is a good city, you guys.
It is. And Williamsburg is so fun. And like right around the hotel, there's so many like cute little places and fun things to do. And I mean, I think if that's like my one piece of advice, if you are new, if this is your first time in New York, like you're going to see this neighborhood. And that is fine. You don't have to do more. Although I would also recommend if you're just like, I've never been to Broadway or I've never been to see a show, like those are really fun things to do. And if you're coming in, you could do that Friday night maybe, or I'm going to see Hadestown on Sunday afternoon with Little Romance before he goes back to college. There's one show I really want to see and it's not going to work out. I have accepted this, I'm sad. So, okay, in Chicago, there is a theater called the Chicago Shakespeare Theater. They do more than Shakespeare. And there was a show that everybody who saw it just said was amazing. It's like a 90-minute dance show called Illinois. It's a good title. And people just said it was like...
Oh, noise with an E.
Yes, right? Get it? And everyone just said it was amazing, but it sold out so fast. And it went from Chicago Shakespeare Theater to a place in New York called the Park Armory.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Park Avenue Armory. I used to be a member there before the pandemic.
Before the pandemic. Well, anyway, it is at the Park Avenue Armory. No, it's not sold out, but we're coming in Thursday. Kelly and I are coming in Thursday. And I was kind of like, maybe we go Thursday night. Like, you know what I mean? Like, a lot of people aren't coming in until Friday. But I just feel like our flight gets in at like 3 and then it's like a really tight, like, but you know, 7. I just feel like, meh, it's not going to happen. Anyway. Find something, like find one really cool thing you want to do at a museum or Broadway and just like, if I can, I will do that one thing. Like, and that I think is what I would recommend to people.
I have had a thought.
Yeah.
Which is what we should do is like a little like 15 minute, like if you're coming to New York for the first time for Fate of Mates Live, here are some other things that you might like to do. And I don't know how we'll do that, but we'll figure it out. Maybe we'll do it like on Instagram as a live or something.
Oh, yeah, that'd be
fun. And then like you can head over there and just watch it. But I'm putting that on my list. We'll do it before the event. And it's so fun. You guys, there are so many meetups already scheduled.
Yeah. And we're going to ask the people at the hotel to give us some recommendations for like bars and restaurants and things that are nearby. But I mean, the thing is like if... It's just like everything's right there. You don't even really need a lot of information.
Just full of like art.
Full of things, yeah, like, to do.
Restaurants and bars and like fun, interesting things. Pizza, sure. We're very famous for our pizza here.
Sure.
It's very different than Chicago pizza. We cut it in triangles.
Although Williamsburg pizza seems to be like there's like a deep dish kind of thing happening there. It's like a very...
I've never experienced that there.
Well, I'm just telling you. I read a whole article about... Williamsburg pizza.
Well, you know how articles can be.
Sure.
Liars. Anyway, but speaking of the Discord, so let's just put a button on this. If you think you would like to come to Fate of Mates Live and hang out with us and Kate and Lauren and Nikki, which of course you would want to do, and like, I don't know, a couple hundred other magnificent firebirds, there are still tickets available. You can get them at fatedmates.net/live. And if you are coming, the Rip Bodice is going to be in the room selling books. But also, if you would like a copy of Kate's The Other Side of Disappearing 3 days early, which of course you do, you can pre-order that book and books by Nikki and Lauren and me ahead of time. And from the Rip Bodice, there's a link on the ticket page. You can get all the information there. And, the Rip Bodice will pack you up a little package and deliver it directly to you at the hotel.
Right. Which is so great. I am super excited about it. So, yeah, I ordered Nikki's new one and I ordered Kate's. I have your books and Lauren's books, but I was kind of like, oh, should I order them? Like I had like a friendship moment. And then I was like,
no, you should not. Don't be silly. Anyway, but let's talk about today, because you said you've been following the conversation on the Discord about Fate of Mates Live, but there's something else on the Discord you've been following.
Okay. The Discord's super fun. If you are a person who's like, I wish I had somewhere to talk about romance, and I wish that place was like a rushing river of romance talk, Because it is really like
so much.
It's a lot. You can't even keep up with it.
There are so many different channels on this Discord. Yeah. And I'm like, they're all busy. I don't know what to say.
So a Discord is like a private conversation server. We host one for the people who are on our Patreon. You can get in on that for $5 a month. And the cool thing about the Discord is that there's so many different conversations. And like my recommendation to people new to the, like, I don't read all the channels. Like there are certain places I go. Like there's like a couple daily channels, just like daily banter and then like kind of general reading chatter. There's like specific channels for subgenres, right? You know, there's a queer romance channel and a sports romance channel and a, you know, paranormal channel. Then there are like kind of high level, there's one called Romance Dialectics, which I think is really fun, or Sex and Romance. But there's a really fun new channel that one of our listeners recommended, and it's called The Daily Question. And people can suggest questions, and then Book It Clarence, that's her like Discord name, will post a question a day. And every once in a while, I think of a question. And I actually thought of a really fun question the other day, which was, what would you consider the opposite of romance? Like when you think about something that's the opposite of romance, what is it? And it was a really interesting conversation because it really illuminated like, and again, people were sort of, I don't remember kind of who pointed this out, but it kind of like illuminates what you think is really important about romance. So if you think like trusting the author is important, then your opposite is a book where the author promised one thing and gave you something else, right? If you think like sort of like breaking down the patriarchy is important, then your opposite is something else, right? So it was really fascinating. But for some reason, it also...
So wait, did you ask for like a specific book?
So I said it could be like a book or...
So you picked A Little Life?
No, you know what is interesting? So I'll tell you my answer. I actually picked a book, a Blitfic book I read recently called The Guest by Emma Klein. Because it's something I read pretty recently. And I was like, because it's, there's no way this woman's going to end up happily. Like she's happily ever never, right? It's never going to happen. But I think part of it is because like she uses relationships are manipulative, right? She manipulates people. And so the way that she connects with people is often for a reason other than like something like pure or good. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I think like one of the things I talked about is in Litfic, like human relationships are often skewed or they make you like a worse person instead of a better one. Mm-hmm. Right. So that was one of my answers. And then, of course, I talked about like Reacher being the opposite as like in as a genre fiction way and not in a bad way. Right?
Reacher's because, never felt a feeling.
Right. Exactly. Like and like the answer to his problems and he like never has to deal with the consequences of anything. Right. Like I just like fixed everything and left. Boom. I'm gone. Mm-hmm. So there's never any sense like in a romance. I think the biggest decision people make that makes it a romance for me is to stick around.
Yeah.
I'm going to stick with this person. I've decided that they are my person. And he doesn't care about people. Like there's like, so anyway, it was a really interesting conversation. But it turned to a really funny conversation at some point about himbos. And I was like, this would be a great topic, right, for us to do. This week's episode of Faded Mates is brought to you by Lauren Morrill, author of More Than a Feeling.
Hockey girlies, unite. We've got your next book for you. We always take care of you here at Faded Mates. When his off-ice antics lead to on-ice trouble.
Uh-oh.
Hockey's bad boy, Decker Brooks, has no choice but to leave Chicago and return to his tiny hometown, Jen, to get out of the limelight, do some community service, and set himself straight with his best friend who lives there.
Does this best friend have a sister by any chance?
His best friend, in fact, has a little sister, Grace, who runs the local library. I can already hear people like, I must read.
I know. Click, click, click.
Grace runs the children's programming at the local library where Decker, this insufferable, contemptible man, is doing his community service. She does not have time to bother with this playboy jock who she never really liked because she is busy saving the library, Jennifer.
Yes, of course.
Except he can't seem to keep his hands to himself, and she doesn't really mind it.
I love it.
So is this romance going to happen? And is it going to last when he has to go back to the big city, Chicago?
I love it. So if you would like a hockey romance that has enemies to lovers vibe with your older brother's best friend and two people in love saving the library, which really, honestly, what could be more Fated Mates than that? Then you should check out More Than a Feeling. It is available in print or with your monthly subscription to Kindle Unlimited. And if your podcast app supports it, you can click on the chapter title to buy the book right now. Thank you to Lauren Morrill for sponsoring this week's episode.
So wait, himbo. Definition. Noun. Noun. Basically, the male version of a bimbo is the where the etymology comes from, right? Like a himbo. But I think we need to sort of discuss what a himbo is, because I do agree that they seem to be thin on the ground, say, in romance.
Yeah. Well, and I think there's a reason for that. I mean, I think the biggest reason is that it's in women really associated with being dumb. And I don't think there's a lot of room for dumbness, dumb heroes in a romance novel.
Well, no. I mean, I am on the record for saying many times, like, heroes must be kings, right? And they have to be king of whatever they are. King lumberjack, like king
right.
dentist, like whatever they are, they just have to be kings. And in order to be, listen, I mean, in romance, in fantasy, to be a king, like, you have to be the best at it.
The best.
Right? Competence is essential. However, competence, it's sort of, well, what competence in what?
Yeah, right. Nobody's like, I'm the most competent dumb guy.
So I do think, but I do think, like, in all the books that I am looking at, like, that I have selected for this topic, like, there is competence, like, they are competent in their own, like, himbo-ness. Yeah.
So I thought I'd bring, so people kind of were defining it, and I asked for permission. I'm going to, like, sort of read some of, I thought they actually had some really good kind of definitions. And so
I do not know, by the way, everybody, I'm coming into this, like, with no knowledge of this conversation.
No, that's why I was like, let me
see aforementioned discussion of I am writing all the time.
So what we, like, sort of, what people kind of circled around to, there were a couple things, was the idea that this is a male character who thinks the primary thing he brings to a relationship is his physical beauty, his charm, or his sexual prowess. That was, like, a definition from a woman named Sarah. And, like, you know, Jess sort of, like, kind of added on to this. Yeah, it's, like, basically someone who's, like, super hot but not thought of as, like, very intelligent. Or, like, and especially one of the things that was interesting is a lot of people, when they were talking about these characters, it's, like, in relationship to, like, his brothers, or, right? Like, there's a way in which this seemed to be, like, almost like a familial, like, you know, I had a bunch of brothers and this was just, like, my role to be kind of, like, the hot dumb one or whatever. So I thought that was really interesting. And then there was, like, some teasing out of some Andrea said, she was like, because sometimes people talk about, is it like a cinnamon roll, right? And someone's like, I think being a himbo is about your intelligence. She said, cinnamon roll is about caring and niceness. And then apparently there's a golden retriever category, which is about energy.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And I was like, oh, I really like that too.
Yeah, this, like, feels right to me.
Yeah. So that was kind of, like, where they, like, landed in terms of some conversation. And I think a lot of us, though, when we think of himbos, think of, like, characters in movies and TV shows.
1,000%. I mean, the first, the clearest version of the himbo to me is Chris Hemsworth in
the Ghostbusters movie.
Ghostbusters reboot, which, by the way, if you have not seen the Ghostbusters reboot, it's so terrific.
Yes.
And I will, like, never not be mad that, like, people were so, that frankly, like, men on the internet were so cranky about it that, like, they never made another one because
it was so great.
It's hilariously funny. And Chris Hemsworth plays the receptionist at Ghostbusters.
Yes, perfectly.
And he is so perfectly a himbo. And he's hired because, like, there. Well, he's hired for lots of reasons. Like, one, like, the price is basically right because he works for nothing. And then also, but like, also the Kristen Wiig character is like very, very attracted to him because he's Hemsworth.
Because he's Hemsworth, right? Mm-hmm.
And Thor has a little himbo energy too.
Oh, for sure. I think so. Yeah.
It does feel like all the Marvel dudes are like, well, I mean, then there's Hemsworth, who's like so hot, he has to be dumb.
You yeah, know, like otherwise it's unfair. My God.
Nobody can be both.
Well, and you know, that's why Loki hates him. Like, my God, you're beautiful like that and you're dumb and everyone thinks you're better than me. Fuck off. Like, I'd be pissed too. Right. So, yeah, I mean, I think the thing that I also found myself thinking about with like that definition, which I really liked, is and I think I've told this story before on the podcast, but I'm going to tell it again because it has a point, I promise. When Christina and Lauren were writing the True Love Experiment, do you remember this? We have a group text, and there's a part at the beginning where it's a reality TV show and all of the different men have like a different archetype, like name tag. Mm-hmm. And they were asking for like male archetypes, and specifically it was like ones that like a normal guy wouldn't know. Because the whole joke of like the scene is that, like, you know, like she's going to, you know, Fizzy's going to be like, and then one can be a blah, blah, blah. And you'd be like, a what? And we are kind of like circling around, and I finally was like, himbo. And we all laughed. Mm-hmm. But part of the reason I think that it's himbo, I think there's a way in which like male archetypes are about, almost all of them are about their competence and their strengths. And like there's this one where it's about them not being super smart. And not and I think that that's just like the patriarchy talking, like, right? Like, when I think about like women archetypes for women, I'm often leading with ones that are really negative. Mm-hmm. And the opposite is like not true. And so I think the other thing about himbo is like, God forbid we talk about, I don't know what I'm trying to say. Like, I think I'm trying to say, like, I think it's kind of unfair. Like, it's okay to have archetypes that are about, sometimes people are just not like the brightest bulbs in the socket. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? It's not hurting anybody. I don't know.
It's not. But I do think that there is, like we said before, like in romance, there are expectations. And I think part of the expectation around, especially in MF, although I do see there are some pretty good instances of himbos in MM.
Yeah.
Like, I think
that's what I wanted to talk about next.
Yeah. I think, and I mean, like, I'm a cishet white lady. Like, I don't, right. I'm not qualified to posit any theory on why that is. But I think that I think that in MF, there is still a, like, kind of big piece of the fantasy for the lion's share of MF readers is a highly competent man.
Yes.
Like, is there, who will, and I mean competent financially, competent like in work, competent in like, I can fix every that way thing for yeah. you. Like, heroes in romance can do, when I say they are kings, it means like they can do anything, right? And they will use all of those skills, whatever they are, in service of you, heroine, right? Yeah. And your happiness. When we talk about romance as happily ever after, like, it's shortcut for both. But it's really in MF about happily ever after for the heroine.
Yeah.
Well, like, the hero obviously is going to be happy, but his happiness is so intricately tied to your happiness yeah. and satisfaction that, like, of course he will be because you're happy.
Right. Well, and I think that's why because I was thinking about it too, like, that it was in some ways easier in the discussion. People were mentioning MM books, some I hadn't read, some I had. But I was thinking, like, well, if you have, like, two men as main characters or three, right, or whatever, like, then you can have room, right? Like, room for one of them to not be that.
And also, right? I will say, in a lot of these, this is making me think, and I don't have a good example because I just literally had this thought. But, like, in Ménage or in, like, what, you know, poly romance right now, right? Like if there are multiple men and one woman, then often, like often there is a sort of dominant, like there's like a dominant submission piece with the men in those books. And like the sub is like happy and like goofy. Like he's there to like guide the heroine through whatever the like dominant relationship is with the like grumpy like guy with daddy issues.
And I have some complicated feelings about that. Like part of me is just like, that doesn't seem quite right. But you know what? I don't know. I mean.
But again, like it's not. Again, I'm not in a poly relationship. I don't know what this is like in real life. But in romance, like, that's not what it's about. Like, it's not about, like, that seems unrealistic.
Yeah. No, exactly.
Listen, the biggest problem we have right now in 2024 in romance is that we are saying that seems unrealistic, like, unironically, way too much. Because, like...
Right, that's the whole
like,
point.
Yeah, romance shouldn't feel realistic. And unfortunately, I think right now, like, we're going through a phase where it feels to everybody like it has to feel real. And like, that's where we start to lose. Now I'm on a whole other thing, but like, that's where we start to lose the like fantasy of it all, which is in many ways the joy of it. Anyway, ask me about that somewhere where I'm not in front of a microphone and I'll tell you lots of things.
I think the other one thing I was going to say is I was finding myself thinking about this in relationship to like age, right? Like, is it that most of the characters are younger, right? And so therefore we see them as being like kind of youthful and unworldly, right? And therefore like they just read in a way that's kind of like himbo because they just don't know the world.
I think it's also like Devil May Care falls into this.
Yeah, that's
a little bit.
Sure, right.
So like I don't think
it's fun. Yeah.
So like, all right, can we just get into it?
Mm-hmm.
And I want to start. I was going to say this for the end, but I think we should start here.
Okay.
So I made this. So, okay, everyone. Jen texted me yesterday morning and I was still in bed. And she was like, what about himbos? And I was like, oh, himbos. I don't know. Like, are there that many? There's like one that I always, like whenever anybody says, like, can you recommend a himbo romance? I recommend this particular one and I will do it in this episode though later. And then I was, and then literally like within, I think I texted you like 5 minutes later and I was like, I'm still in bed and now I have 8 books.
Yes,
like I'm ready.
Right. I'm ready.
Right.
Yeah.
This is, by the way, this is Jen and my superpower.
Oh, it's how we work. Yeah.
Fate of Mates Kings. We are, that's our skill, our competency. Yes.
No, I was the same way. I was like, do I have any? And then I was like, yeah, I do.
So when I broke them up, I was like, all right, contemporary, historical. And then I was like, what about paranormal? Like, what does himbo look like in paranormal? And here's what himbo looks like in paranormal. Himbo looks like Cadian.
Yeah.
The
Woad.
Cadian Woad, the like McLaren driving demon second brother.
The brother, right?
The spare of like this demon kingdom. I mean, like, listen, not to bring it too close to home, but like Prince Harry's a little bit of a himbo.
A lot of a himbo, to like, be honest. It's fine.
I really have questions about whether that man before Meghan Markle married him knew how to use a sponge. Like, but my point is, like, there is something to the, like, spare in here, too. Like, Cadian doesn't have to worry. This is my Devil May Care argument. Cadian doesn't have to worry about, like, any of the, like, demon, you know, kingdom fraught shit that is happening, right, to Rydstrom. Now, of course, I'm going to have to look up the title of this book. Hang on.
You know.
6 seasons in.
What are titles?
And I still can't come up with the titles of these Cressley books.
I can, like, picture it.
Holly, it says, I could tell you all about the book.
Sure, of course.
Okay, Dark Desires After Dusk.
Okay, I never would have come up with that.
Come on now.
I'm going to make this a game at Fated Mates Live. I'm going to add it to my list. So you guys, one of my jobs is to like make games. I feel like that's what I bring to the table.
It's because you're good at them.
And then I'm like, oh, that would be a fun game for Fated Mates Live. I'm like going to write it down right now.
So, like, the irony, of course, about Cade is that he is a rage demon, but, like, he's not. He, like, drives a fast car, and, like, this whole book is, like, him kind of being a little goofy.
Yeah.
And like, he's known throughout the land as, like, Rydstrom is the serious king. And Kate is like the like relaxed and groovy spare, right? And like, I think that's cool. I also, so there's that Cressy sort of tackles Devil May Care there. And then I want to posit that also Gareth, who is like, goes also on a road trip through, and I think there's something to be said here about like the road trip as like a like a sort of really smart way of writing a himbo, right? Like, because he too has to learn. So he's like a, all the werewolves, all the like in Immortals After Dark are like kind of playful and they're like goofier, right? Because they're literally like when they're young, they're pups. Gareth sort of has this, like when Lucia first sees him, he's like playing soccer and he's got like his tongue hanging out. Like he's and they see each other and they know they're fated mates like instantly. And she believes she has to remain a virgin, however, in order to retain her power as the greatest archer whoever there was. This is one of my favorite IAD books. It's such a romp. It's or not a romp, but it's like a great, great story. It's a road trip through the Amazon. And I think you can read it possibly out of order too. But there's something there where like he like, and then he's like, he just chases her because he's like, mine, but not like in a mine, in a sort of like, ooh, mine. Like,
there's a ball. Like, let me chase it.
Yeah, friend. And she's like, fuck you, not friend. Like, and there's something really like charming about that. And so I guess my takeaway from this is you can do himbo anywhere.
Right. So, you know, what's funny is it was not on my list until you started talking about it. But my favorite Black Dagger Brotherhood book is Lover, Rage and Mary. And Rage, yes, I think, right? Rage, I think, also has that vibe because the deal is he has this like dragon something monster tattoo on his back, but it's symbolic of a real thing, a real monster that shares his body. And he can fight or fuck. Like, that's the only way for him to essentially, like, siphon off the energy that this thing is literally, like, sending through his body all the time. And because of this, all the other brothers in the Black Dagger Brotherhood think that he's, like, a himbo. Like, he's constantly just sleeping around. And they assume that he is having a great time, that he loves it. And it's not until he meets Mary that he's like, I hate it. Right. Like, this is not who I really am. And it's really fascinating, like, essentially in that way, like, himbo is like the armor he puts on. It's the only way for him to sort of like survive this thing that he, you know, sort of saddled with.
Yeah.
And then it's not until later in the book where he like he's so badly hurt that like the scribe virgin like gives him a break from his little friend or whatever. And then he's like, I miss it. Like, and then he realizes, oh, no, wait, like maybe this is not a weakness, but a strength. And he's able to sort of overcome that whole entire kind of way that he was operating. So, I mean, I think that that's, like another really good example of kind of how that works. I would even say, you know, I was thinking about IAD2. Because I was like, I wonder if like Malcolm, who's my favorite.
I was going to say Malcolm, right? Too, but Malcolm's tricky because Malcolm isn't
a himbo.
Doesn't have the qualities of a himbo. He is just isolated.
Yes, but that's the other part of it. It's like, so his, it's not youth, it's inexperience, right? Like he kind of gets to the real world or gets back out of, you know, with.
Right.
And so it's just kind of like, it's an interesting thing. It's kind of like, what is it that makes you kind of innocent almost of the other things going on? I mean, he's not a himbo exactly, but he definitely is like, listen, I love going down. I don't know. Let's do that first.
Yeah.
Right? So, yeah,
I mean, it's not enough, though.
He's on the edge. I think Kadeon's the better call. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I think Kate is just, he's it because, like, he's never cared about anything ever. And then he's like,
like,
oh, I care
Rage,
about this
though.
Very much.
Yeah, like Rage, it's kind of like a suit he puts on because he made that big mistake, right?
Right, right, right.
So, yeah, I think that that's really, yeah, that's really, that's great.
I mean, I will say this. Wait, we should also say, like, in modern monster romance, like contemporary 2020s monster romance, I think there are a ton of these characters. Like, I think a lot of these orcs are, like, just doofuses who, like,
sure,
want to protect, like, who are like, I'm big and I'll protect you.
Yeah.
Like, fuck. There's a sort of gentleness to the himbo.
Yeah, I think so. I agree.
Which I think is part of why I was so worried I wouldn't be able to come up with enough of them, because, like, I need, as you all know, a hero to, like, fully be willing to just, like, rip the head off of an enemy for me. And that's not really himbo energy.
Yeah. I have one more. I guess I'd call it supernatural. It's a male-male romance by C. Rochelle. It's the first book in the Villainous Thing series, and it's called Not All Himbos Wear Capes.
Nice.
It's terrific. It basically...
Is this the same person who also wrote That Time I Got Drunk and Yeeted a Whatever no, at
that's,
a Demon?
That's someone different.
Which I just bought because I was like... This yeah. Because there was a big kerfuffle about it.
Yeah, yeah.
So...
No, this is like a, you know, it's funny because I've been like, I can't really find a lot of superhero romances, but this one's really clever. So there are two. So Xander is like the children. OK, it's big city and a corporation calls like the biggest corporation or something essentially has hired superheroes to like and supervillains or superheroes to protect big city. But there's also supervillains. And his name is he has a bunch of siblings and their parents are super villains. And his name is Dr. Antihero. But the truth is that no one really knows is that he doesn't actually have powers. Right. So he's kind of faking it.
Nice.
And he gets on a dating app that's for normies. So there's like the supers and the normies called bangers, which I thought was really funny.
That's the frankly, how is that not?
I mean, that's the thing about this book. It's like really like wink, wink about like a lot of the like archetypes and tropes of superhero books. And he gets hooked up with a young guy named Butch, who is actually a superhero named Captain Masculine. Nice. And basically, like, they get hooked up on this dating app and they go out and they just have great sex. Like, but the thing is that Xander, the villain, realizes that Butch is like, I mean, okay, Butch is so sweet and so good that, like, he, like, won't even swear. He'll be like, oh, sugar. And you know what I mean? Because he's the superhero.
Sure, sure.
And Xander is just like, I am going to destroy this guy. Like, I love how innocent he is. And, you know, and so he just sees this as a real opportunity to essentially, like, I don't know, like, corrupt someone, right? In some ways. Because Butch's himboness is so, like, just on the surface, he can't even hide it. Like, he blushes. You know what I mean? Now, they have no idea that one's a villain and one's a hero. That's, like, part of the story. But it is really, really fun. Like, this is a super fun read. And it's a whole series. And I think I'm going to probably burn right through them. Not just for the humor, but just also for, like, these plots. So the next one is called Gentlemen Prefer Villains, for example.
Nice.
So, yeah, and I just thought it was really – so Butch, the himbo, it's like youth, inexperience, but also like being submissive, but also like tied into his superhero-ness.
Sure.
Right?
So this is one of the things that I'm sort of curious about now that you're talking about this. Like, is it possible that like superheroes in general are himbos? So I'm thinking about like Captain America.
Sure.
There's like an energy to Captain America. Like Captain America has never like gone down on a lady.
I don't think he's ever kissed anybody.
Well, I mean, like eventually he does. But like We were going to do, there was a point where we were going to do a New Year's Eve episode where we talked literally about this thing.
Yeah.
Like, who is the hero who is most likely to.
Yeah. Because like, it was like a tweet. I can't, I mean, sorry to whoever you were.
Heroes who eat. Yeah. Right. And I feel like, but I also, so is that sort of like unwillingness to swear, like unwillingness, like would always like stop what they were doing to like help a. An elderly person across the street or whatever, like, is that part of the, that's that, that sort of golden retriever energy.
Right. The good or the cinnamon roll energy, right? Like the goodness, doing the right thing.
Yeah. Like just like a really decent dude.
Yeah.
Has like, just like a, it's like a drop of himbo.
This week's episode of Faded Mates is brought to you by Alexander Harvey, author of The Husband Heist, part of the Dainty Devil series.
Okay, so if you are looking for historical books that have the kind of be a lady, do crimes, get into shenanigans with hot earls vibe.
Who doesn't have that vibe?
I mean, it's all I want to read all the time. This book is for you. So Lady Summer, our heroine, is a Duke's twin sister, which is a double-edged sword. She is both very noticed because she is a Duke's twin sister and totally ignored because she is not a Duke. But so she's sort of bored, I think, and that means she's got to find something to do. So why not steal a bunch of art? She's become an art thief, and she has stolen a bunch of art from the Mayfair Art Collectors Society, and no one has noticed except for very sexy Elliot Howard, the Earl of Blackpool,
perfect,
who is the bane of her existence. And there is a problem because Elliot knows what she's up to, and he is right there when she finds out that the art she has stolen includes a list of women spies working for the crown. So this information was like attached to the painting in some way. And now it has put her directly in the crosshairs of both the crown, spies, baddies, and Elliot is now just in her business, protecting her, keeping her safe, making things worse.
What amazing.
It's chaos, but there's also smashing.
So if you would like this Rivals to Lovers, he falls first and she has a secret, you should definitely check out this book in the Dainty Devil series, which is, I might say, hot as hell. So it is available in print or with your monthly subscription to Kindle Unlimited. And if your podcast app supports it, you can click on the chapter title to buy the book right now. Thanks, as always, to Alexander Harvey for sponsoring this week's episode.
I'm going into historicals because I think that an art, like a prototypical himbo for romance and in media is Rupert Carsington, fourth son of the Earl of Harrogate. So again, here we are with like no responsibilities whatsoever. Sure. Probably not really treated very well, like just sort of like forgotten by his family in Loretta Chase's Mr. Impossible. Now, I want to caveat this with, this was written, it's, there is some like Egypt, it's like set in Egypt in the Regency. There's some like colonialism in here that like, you just be prepared as you go in here. But I also want to say that it is a real romp. This is, I think, in my opinion, this is Loretta's second best book. I've read this book a million times and I really do love it. It is a retelling of The Mummy, which we confirmed when she came on a Trailblazer episode with us. So if you love The Mummy, you will love this book. And it makes sense that it's a retelling of The Mummy because I think Brendan Fraser's character in The Mummy is like also a really great himbo character.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So in this book, Rupert, it's basically like he's the young, he's like the fourth son, as I said, of an earl. So like he has money, he has like freedom. No one expects him to do anything. He's allowed to be like reckless. He like, you know, fucks whatever he wants. He like does, he like just lives his life in like pure joy. You know, the joke is like he literally can get out of anything. Like he gets trapped into like any, no woman can trap him. Nothing. Like he's just slippery and, you know, goofy, except now he is in a prison in Cairo and he can't get out. And then Daphne, the heroine, who is not a librarian, but like a scholar who's looking for her brother, who is a treasure hunter. And she's basically like, will you help me? I'll get you out of this prison if you promise to help me find my brother. Literally in the cover copy, she is the brains, he is the brawn. And it's really a delight. And you learn, of course, because it's Loretta, like, he's not all that he seems. And like, he, you know, it's a little bit The Mummy. It's a little bit like, I'm going to talk about another book that's a retelling of the Scarlet, that's more Scarlet Pimpernelly. But like, there is more to Rupert than you know, it seems. And I do think in all of these books, we discover what these characters are kings of.
Yeah, agree.
And it's not kings of being, you know, handsome and...
Sure, great in bed.
Yeah.
Reckless. That's just like a bonus. You know, it's funny because I found myself thinking about historicals too. And then I was like, Sarah, we'll just cover it. Because I think a lot of the ones I probably thought of, it's like Himbo is like the origin, the state of being at the beginning of the book. Right. And then the older brother dies or whatever. And all of a sudden they're like, I was promised this life as a himbo. And now I have to like.
Sure.
Right. And I mean, I think like.
And they're never stupid.
Like, no, of course not.
And
right?
Not that himbos are stupid, but do you know? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, there's
right.
always like some kind of like, it's like the growth is instantaneous.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways. Like we just see like now the brother's dead and he's.
I mean, I found myself thinking about, like, would people think of, like, West Ravenel this way? But he was just more like a drunkard. You know what I mean? It wasn't really like he was a himbo.
I'm not sure.
I wouldn't call him that.
Lisa
I mean,
has
so,
ever written a himbo.
No, like
her,
I don't
her
think
heroes
so.
Are
well, that
way
was the
too
other
competent.
Thing. I was like, there's no way.
It's not her core story at all.
And then I was kind of like, oh, then I found myself thinking, like, a similar thing is, like, I wonder if there are, like, certain authors who are like, yeah, I can, like, write this character. Right. And then it was just a really interesting like kind of thought, like, are there people who write this character and then people who just don't? Right.
I think there are people who like are not interested in this character at all.
Yeah. Right. Right.
And I do think it goes back to like the DNA of the genre and what it is supposed to do, that it's like hard. It's also challenging to write a character who like. You know, to like write a romance hero, for example, who like goes against type. Okay. So the next one I want to talk about is Lauren Willig. So Lauren Willig, you all know I'm on the record. I don't love spy romances, but but this series, the Pink Carnation series, I actually really do love. And these are all like highly skilled characters. The first book, The Secret History of the Pink Carnation, is a retelling of the Scarlet Pimpernel. So the hero comes off as being like a fop and like not that like skilled at anything. And then, of course, it turns out he's like one of England's greatest spies, which is not Himbo, right? But that's it. So then, and then the whole series, which is, I don't know, 10 or 11 books long, is really interesting because in each, like, the question is throughout the whole thing, like, who is the Pink Carnation? Like, you learn pretty quickly as a reader, but then it's a question of, like, the world learning who Pink Carnation is. Over the course of the book, there is this sort of goofy character, a goofy side character who's, like, a friend of a friend, who's like ancillary to the group. He is not a spy. There is no argument that he is a spy. His name is Turnip. And like he's like his name is like something else. I think like Reggie or something, but like everyone calls him Turnip. And he is like accidentally, because he's connected vaguely to this group in The Mischief of the Mistletoe, which is a Christmas book. And the Christmas book in the series, he is accidentally sort of thrown into the spotlight because everybody, because the bad guys sort of believe that he might be the Pink Carnation. And there's like, this is a very, very silly historical. It's not, I mean, it's lovely, but like there are these like silly moments, like there's a secret message inside a Christmas pudding. And then everybody's just, and Turnip happens to have this Christmas pudding. And then it's like Turnip's getting messages. So he must be the Pink Carnation. And it's very goofy because he's like, what?
Yeah,
like, right. And he's a delightful, very sweet character who like could never, ever be a spy. But then like we see over the course of the book, like there's with all of these books, like there's like a little bit of action, a little bit of adventure. And then suddenly like Turnip is sort of forced into like being a hero. And it's, I have found this book charming from the very moment I ever read it, because like there's something lovely about seeing like that character, that sort of secondary character who like was never supposed to be a hero, being thrust into like, and now you're a hero in a spy novel. And
that's great.
It's really sweet. It's called The Mischief of the Mistletoe. And, you know, put it on your list as like for Christmas this year. And then,
yeah, you have another.
I'm going to choose Violence.
I love it. Let's do it.
I'm so sorry, everyone.
I choose Violence all the time.
I already see it. I know. I mean, it's not Violence like Matthew McFadden is not hot, because that's a different kind of thing. But I want to put Romancing Mr. Bridgerton up for eligibility.
Ooh, I like it. Let's do it.
Colin Bridgerton.
Total himbo. I'm down with this. Yeah, I agree.
I said what I said.
I agree.
Like, I don't even feel like I have to explain it. Again, though, now I'm sort of seeing a theme. Third son.
Yeah, right.
Not going to inherit. Even if Anthony dies, Benedict is there. Colin has nothing to do.
Yeah.
Except be like
charming and like handsome.
Carefree,
right.
Which is why Penelope loves him so much. And because she has so much, like, you know, she's so in her head about so much of herself. By the way, I'm talking about book Colin. I don't know.
We don't know. Like, I'm curious to see what they do with show Colin. Yeah.
Like, show Colin has been around already. Like, he's been in love. Oh, like, he's had that weird, like,
yeah, right.
Oh, right. Relationship. In the first season, he went on a grand tour. Like, he's done some stuff that, like, book Colin did not do. And so there's that. But anyway, I'm talking about book Colin, and I think book Colin and book Penelope, I think Penelope is obviously like the serious character.
Yeah, she has more to lose.
First of all, she's Lady Whistledown.
Yeah.
Second of all, she's concerned about her like family.
Sure.
Thirdly, she is like very aware of the fact that she is unmarriageable because she is a fat girl.
Yeah.
And so she is worried in a lot of ways about her future. Colin has never worried for one second about his future.
Yeah.
And so he is kind of a dork.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, everyone. I too think that, you know, Romancing Mr. Bridgerton is a great book, but Colin Bridgerton is a himbo.
That's
what I've said.
Is true. It is. That's funny. It's funny because...
So let it be written.
Yeah. I mean, you know what? I think that is my least favorite Bridgerton book, actually. So I wonder if that, like, thinking about it in this light will help me think about maybe why that is. That's interesting.
But it's also, Jen, of course it is. It's friends to lovers.
It's a book I think about as being one of the things that romance authors are so good at is, like stirring up the anticipation for like a certain couple coming
down
the
road. And this was it. I mean, like, we were salivating for this book.
And so I think another part of it is just that then if it doesn't, for whatever reason, like kind of hit for you, it almost always feels like a bigger disappointment than one that just was like, you know, I don't know if that makes sense. That's not even really about the book itself. That's now just like a statement in general about how hard it is when you're really like, oh, this is going to be the best book. What's going to happen? And then for whatever reason, if it doesn't work for you, then you're like, meh.
I mean, I do think also there's something to like Penelope. We all just wanted Penelope. Look, listen, I wanted Penelope Featherington to like have her.
Have it all.
Win it.
Yeah.
Have the day.
Yeah.
And like, so for me, that book works for me in a lot of ways, or it did work for me in a lot of ways. Although I will say I have not read it in a long time. But I mean, I will always have a soft spot for Penelope because she was like the chubby girl who just like loved that boy.
Yeah.
Loved that cheerful.
That cheerful, sweet boy.
He's just a cheerful, funny boy.
Yeah. No, but I do. I think you're right. I think that. And I, like I said, I think maybe that'll help me like rethink of it.
This week's episode of Fated Mates is sponsored by Madison Score, author of Bride or Die.
So this is a really cute premise. This is the first book in the Claire Hartley Accidental Mystery series. And Claire Hartley has, I think, the coolest job in romance, which is she is a wedding proposal planner. And so she is like kind of right in the thick of planning a new proposal for someone when her ex-college roommate disappears. She has to call off her own wedding and deal with these very strange, mysterious threats. So as part of her job for the proposal, she is forced to work with a handsome, hunky, grumpy filmmaker. And the two of them together are going to have to figure out, because you can't wait around for the cops, right? To figure out what it is that this serial killer might have Claire in the crosshairs. So she has to find her ex-roommate, plan a perfect proposal, and take down a serial killer, all with a handsome man in tow.
Listen, I believe in her.
I do too.
And I know he's going to treat her right. So if you also know that he's going to treat her right, you want to read Bride or Die right now. It's available in print, ebook, or with your monthly subscription to Kindle Unlimited. And if your podcast app supports it, you can click on the chapter title to buy the book right now. Thanks to Madison Score for sponsoring this week's episode. We have a lot to say. We're already an hour in.
I know.
I thought this was going to be like, so fast.
I still have like a whole list.
I'm so sorry. We haven't even gotten to contemporaries.
I know. Well, I would like to talk. So let's do it. I would like to talk about Mal from the Stage Dive series. This is a book we've talked about before, but I think he's like a really great example of a himbo who is just like a golden retriever, right? Mm-hmm. Like he is just like a goofball, and that is his job in the band, right? Like, because, of course, two of the bandmates are brothers, and the other one is just brooding. And so, like, you can tell that Mal's job was to just, like, be funny and, like, break up the tension between the rest of these ding-dongs. And he embraces that with verve and zest, and he is great. And I think one of the things that I really liked about this book is that even though he goes through a tragedy, his mother dies in one of the books, and then we see him kind of dealing with it. He in no way does Kylie Scott ever unhimbo him. Mm-hmm. And I really want to say
the whole series.
Yes. And I want to say I think that is why he is to me like the best himbo of all, because it's never like something that she treats as like a problem that needs to be fixed. We need to age him up or grow him up or whatever, right? Like he's sad and still a fucking himbo. And he is a great character because of it. I would never want to be with this man. Like he definitely, like, no, you know what I mean?
Chaos incarnate.
Chaos incarnate. But he is a great character, and he really, I love that book too. So it's Play is the name of that book. And I think the other thing I think about a lot is, you know, that series is all from the heroine's point of view, heroine only point of view. I think most of her books are actually. Mm-hmm. And so you're also getting the like a look at a himbo where there's no interiority to him. It's really a tour de force, I think, in a lot of ways. It's a great, great book, right?
And the way that that's a really, really great point about POV, because you fall for him just like she does.
Yes.
And it's like Kylie's like, you may think that you wouldn't, but
right,
I'm going to show you how great these dudes can be. Oh, that whole series is just terrific. The other day, somebody, I think on Instagram, posted a picture of like all of the books that Fated Mates, that they've been listening to our back catalog. And everyone, in season 2 of Fated Mates, we did Season one was IAD, and then season two was like the books that blooded us, like the books that like made us romance readers. And so we talk, we did a deep dive almost every other week about like a book that we really loved as romance readers. And so she's listening to the back catalog, and she posted a picture to Instagram, and it was like just a notes app screenshot of like all the books she has either bought or is intending to buy. And it said one of the lines was Stage Dive series, and then in parentheses it said maybe, and I was like, no, yes, that's the one,
right? That's the one. And Lead is like, it's also one of those series where like Lead is my favorite, the one with Jimmy, but I have read these four books over and over again with my eyes. I've listened to them on audio. I mean, they're like real comfort reads to me, because I think they are like literally like, it's like four perfect romances. Bam.
Yeah.
And
it's funny because you said Mal, and I thought of Mal too. And I also thought of Ben.
Yeah.
Who is in the fourth book. And I feel like Ben doesn't get as much love in large part because like
the plot of that one's kind of a rough one too. Yeah.
There's like it's a secret baby, or it's like a accidental pregnancy book. But he's like kind of goofy too. And like, you know, I think there's, and like just has no plan, is like, you know, a vibe. I mean, it does sort of feel like rock star romances, like part of speaking of things that don't seem realistic, like in rock star romances across the board, it often feels like these rock stars are very, very focused. Like they're very serious men considering what their job is. And I think Kylie does not, like, she is very fine with saying like there are definitely rock stars who are not serious people.
Oh, yeah. Who are like
most of them.
This is amazing. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Let's go.
Yeah, let's have it.
I'm rich and pretty and famous, and I can do whatever the fuck I want. You know,
so I want to talk about rich and pretty and famous, because I do think those are three things that go together that often make a himbo. And so I think we have to talk about sports.
I was going to just say, like, if we're not going to sports next, what are we doing?
We got to go to sports. And I think we have to go to sports because Travis Kelce exists in the world.
You know what? I've got to tell you, though, I feel like Jason Kelce is the real himbo of those two.
I mean, the two of them together, bless their little cotton
They're like
socks.
A black hole of himbo. I love them. I love them. I don't listen to, like, a lot of other podcasts. I was like, I might listen to those two dummies. They seem very nice.
Really, really sweet.
Like and hanging out with like guys in a basement in high school.
No, but Jen, every time somebody posts a screenshot of one of Travis Kelce's tweets, I'm like,
completely
sweet babies. Right? I mean,
yeah, bless.
Anyway, that's what we'll say about real people. We're not here to talk about real people.
No.
So we have to talk about sports.
Sports people, yeah.
Can we talk about Kristen Callahan's The Game Plan?
Sure, you can. I've not read it.
Oh, really? That's so funny to me. I thought that you liked Kristen Callahan the way I do, which is an obsessive
verb. Is this the one where they fuck in the library? I might have read this one.
Fucking in the library is not a kink for me. But I have another book on my list where they fuck in the library.
Never Sweeter by Charlotte Stein.
Yes. You
also
do that
a himbo
next.
And also they fuck in the library.
And also sports related.
Yeah.
Okay, so... this one is the one where he is her brother-in-law's best friend. And he is like, he's a football player. He's like bearded, tattooed. He's just like gigantic.
Oh, wait, and is he a virgin?
He's a virgin. That's why I haven't read it.
I was like, wait, it's not interested, but you keep going. Yeah.
No, he's virgin, but also he has a pierced penis. Like, there's a lot going on in this book. Listen, what I said earlier about, like, it's not realistic. Sure. Give it to me.
I support everyone who loves a virgin hero, but I'm going to pass every time. I will DNF books. I'll be like, oh, fuck. Kidding me?
I mean, I don't know. I was charmed by it, but that's like this is another piece of it, right? What did you say? It's like the golden retriever energy, and what's the other energy? Like,
oh yeah, like cinnamon roll. It's like intelligence, energy, or like niceness, right?
Yeah, like he's just like very sweet. They have like she is like I can't with football players. I can't with like she can't for any number of reasons.
Yeah,
and he's just like but what if you did? Right? And it's really charming. Listen, I think Kristen writes a great, great book. Maybe I wouldn't have gotten to The Virgin Hero with a Pierce Cock, like, if it weren't Kristen, but it was really terrific. And it was, and it's really worth it. He's a really, like, this hero is, like, real kind.
Yeah. I love it.
And I'm a big fan.
Yeah, people, I'm sorry, everybody. I'm sure this book is great. It's just, like, there's a couple things that are, like, super not for Jen, and that's one of them.
It's fine.
Yeah.
There are things that are not for Sarah. I mean, I'm, you know, more relaxed about it.
I am not relaxed about anything, everybody. Real Scorpio, I'm always at 10. Energy it's fine, from
Jen for is sure. A Scorpio.
Big time Scorpio energy.
Everyone's like, yeah, no shit.
Yeah, like all the time. Okay, I would like to talk about, I think Susan Elizabeth Phillips has a couple himbos, and we've talked about them before, so I'm just going to mention them.
Oh, wait, can I just say one other thing about the game plan that I think is important? Because I don't think it's done really ever, and it's important. It's a long-distance relationship romance.
Oh, fun. Okay.
Which is also another reason, I think, why it has a special place in my heart, because my relationship with Eric began with, like, a year of us being long-distance. And I know a lot of relationships are long-distance out there. And if you're sort of like, I wish there were more books about that, this is the one. She's in, like, New Orleans. He's in New York City, or the reverse, wherever. Probably. I can't remember. But the point is, they're long-distance, and it's
great.
Yeah.
Okay. I think Susan Elizabeth Phillips has a couple of great himbos. Bobby Tom Denton. I mean, name is destiny, right? that dude is also plays for the football.
Anybody fights me on Susan Elizabeth Phillips, I'm like, you make Bobby Tom. You write a Bobby Tom that's hot, and then talk.
And make it work. And that book is Heaven, Texas. And then the other himbo I was thinking about is Kenny Travelers from Lady Be Good, where himbo is like he has, like, taken himbo and elevated it to a level, like, again, though, as armor, right? Because he was super spoiled as a kid, and everybody just thinks he's real dumb, and he is, like, hilarious. He's, like, slow, doesn't move fast, just does everything at his own level, like, chats up anybody who wants to talk to him, you know, gets real upset when people try and call him Ken. He's like, it's Kenny. You know what I mean? The whole thing is so great. And I think for sure, like, she has really, like, nailed the idea that, like, there are a lot of athletes who get along essentially in that high stress world by, like, never putting themselves out there in that way. And it always feels a little bit like, you know, they're just like, yeah, I hit the jackpot. Let me enjoy this. I feel like one of the things I was thinking about a lot, though, is, you know, I wonder if all these new hockey romances are himbos. Like, I think that L. Kennedy series, not The Deal, but the second one, for sure, he had, like, a himbo vibe. And I found myself wondering,
I think,
like,
that's real. I think Sawyer Bennett has
an appeal there.
Yeah, I've talked about Sawyer Bennett before because she, like, lands really well. Some of her books really, really land well for me, the hockey books. But there are a lot of those hockey books that I have not read because, like, the hero vibe is very, like, soft. You know, I do think that, like, sometimes I think that maybe Fated Mates could do with, like, a periodic guest who, like, romance that, you know, our listeners got a little more of that
in vibe
in their ear holes. But, you know, this podcast is free, everyone.
Exactly. I'm so sorry. You can go to TikTok for that.
Anyway, but if you do like soft romance, there's a space in the market for a podcast about soft romance.
And then the last book I had on my list was The Roommate by Rosie Dannen.
Okay, wait, before you go there, we got to talk about Never Sweeter.
Oh, yeah, God.
So Never Sweeter is really fascinating, though, because there is nothing soft about this romance, but there is something very soft about this hero.
Yeah, yeah, which is he was sort of a party to some very extreme bullying that the heroine experienced in high school, right?
to be totally fair, like he was, like she believes like it was.
She believes it was him.
It was him.
Right. Because he was.
We're spoiling this because like it ultimately comes out that he was like he was there, but he wasn't.
Right. He was a witness, but not necessarily the perpetrator. But she. But you
she
know what?
Know that.
But the truth is like. It's kind of the same thing, like, right? Like, you're not standing up and saying we shouldn't be doing this and you're there. And
it's so terrible. And he really is. He has realized that, like, he needs to do, like, serious penance for this. And the penance that he decides to do is basically making her orgasm all the time.
Well, and I think
later, it's several years later,
but also, like, he realizes that the terrible thing that they did was make her feel awful about herself. And so he's determined to, like, make her realize, in fact, that he thinks she's beautiful, right? So a lot of it is also
about...
Well,
and about, he does. Like, he's, he's, like, I mean, I wouldn't say obsessed, but he's, like, really into her.
Yeah. And I think that there is... You know, this is, like, a book that I resisted reading for a long time. I was like, I am not interested in this. I just, like, you read the back, and if you're like... bully, right? But I think it really works because it genuinely is someone who is like, I did wrong things when I was younger and I want to fix them. And I want to fix them by being really honest with her. Not like I'm going to fix them for her, but just kind of like at some point he's like, I have to be honest with her about what I'm going through and what I felt and and like listen to her. And I think that it's ultimately super effective. And they bang in a library.
They do bang in a library. And he's very sweet.
Yeah.
And he's like making money by going into these like underground fights.
Yes.
And like poor baby. And he's not very smart. And like, but he really loves her.
Yeah.
And this is the book, I believe, where he has a penis the size of a Pringles can, though. So just watch out.
Sure.
Content warning.
Content warning. Yeah.
But it's very hot. Yeah. Charlotte, I've said this before. I think Charlotte writes a really, really sexy hot romance. This one is the one where I really started to think about them in a phone booth. Like you just feel like you're so close to them and you can't get away.
Right.
So you might as well just enjoy it.
It's great.
I have two more.
Okay. I have one more. Let me just... You want to do one of yours, and then I'll end with, I can do the roommate.
Sure. I want to talk about Zoe Castile, who is Zoraida Cordova. She's been on the podcast a couple times. Zoe Castile has a series called... the book is called Strip that I want to talk about.
Yeah.
I forget what the... Oh, it's called the Happy Ending series. Of course it is.
Of course it is.
It's a 3-book series. Each of the heroes of the series are sex, like do some kind of sex work, like or ancillary sex work. This is called Stripped. The hero is Zach, and he is a stripper. And the meet cute in this book is very, very great. They have both sent their laundry out to be done. This is a real city, like New York City plot. They both sent their laundry out to be done at the same place. She picks up her laundry from the cleaners, opens the bag, and discovers a star-spangled sequined thong that he has sent to the cleaners to be cleaned as part of his laundry because it is part of his act.
Sure.
And then she's like, why? What is happening? I have the wrong bag. I'm late for work. And then there's like a knock on the door and he's like, I need my thong back because it's work.
Yeah. It's amazing.
But here's the thing. Like Zach kind of like, so she's a teacher. He's a stripper. Like he like convinces her to have dinner with him. And he knows that like he's like quickly figures out like, she is so smart. Like she has this like fancy, this like family that like would never accept him. She is like, she's just like way out of his league. And he believes that. He's like, she's out of my league. Like I would just be lucky to spend like, to like follow along behind her for the rest of my life, which is like, and at the same time, he's also like charming and funny and like, listen, has the abs. So he basically decides like, I am going to like just be the perfect man for her. Like I'm going to support her and love her and tell her she's beautiful and like fuck her until she passes out. And it's going to be amazing.
Perfect.
And like, and he's great. He's just like charming and funny. And he's just like a guy.
Yeah, it is. It's great. It is a great book. That's a great book. It's a great series.
King of pole dancing. Yeah.
Okay. I think I'm going to talk about The Roommate by Rosie Dannon, in which the main character, Josh, has been a porn star, a literal porn star. And Clara is essentially like moves cross country to like live with a friend who then like, I think, bails on her. And so she ends up instead sharing a house with Josh. And, you know, it's really interesting because there's like a lot of class issues, obviously, like, you know, him working in porn and her kind of being like, wait, what, you know, like the stigma around like that, obviously. But also she really, I think, has like not had great sex with people and sort of is very interested in this idea of like pleasure. And the thing about Josh, though, is you definitely like learn that like his, again, like kind of being a himbo for him has very much been about like kind of living down to people's expectations almost. And Clara is the person who can like kind of really see through that and see through him. And then also say like, hey, wait, these experiences you have, this is something that like people could really value. And they end up, I think, like starting a company essentially where they're going to teach like YouTube videos or whatever, teach people to like how to have great sex. And so it ends up being something where like instead of being ashamed of his background or the people he knows or how he feels about himself, that she's able to really be like, hey, like you understand pleasure in your body in a way that I don't. And I think that that's really important. So, but yeah, like Josh really, it's again, like sort of himbo as armor for a lot of the book for him. And there's like really poignant things I think about like how he feels about like what his family must think of him and, you know, like the disappointment of like, you know, kind of like, I loved this work and I actually was great at it, but how do I like align that with like the way I was raised and the way my family feels. And I just thought his journey was actually really like poignant, I guess, is I'm going to say it again. Like I just was really won over by him as a character in this book. Yeah.
All right. Well, I promised that I would recommend the book that I always recommend to anybody who asks for himbo. And that is Eve Dangerfield's Open Hearts. Have you read this one?
I've read a lot of her. No, but I don't think you have.
Yeah. Cause he's a little bit of a submissive. So you probably haven't. We're just covering all the bases on Not For Jen today.
It's fine.
So, but somebody actually asked on Instagram a couple days ago if we would do an episode on, cause they're reading. Our next read along is Heather Guare's
Preferential Treatment.
And that is Alpha Submissive Hero. And so,
Femdom.
It's femdom-y. And somebody asked, like, would you ever do an episode on femdom? The answer is only if Jen gets sick again.
Yeah.
And then we'll do it. But to be fair, I don't know
that we would ever do an episode on dominant and submissive either. Like, I don't, like, that's just a smaller subsection of something I'm just, like, not super interested in.
No, but I am on the record for really liking this particular one version of it. So when we do the preferential treatment episode, I will make sure that I, like, name check a couple of other books that you can read if you like that thing. That said, this is a book that you would scratch that itch, but that's not why I'm going to talk about it. Okay, so this is, it's called Open Hearts by Eve Dangerfield. It's the second book in a series, and it's the sister of the heroine of the first book in the series. Both of these characters are in the first book. He is the roommate of the hero from the first book, and she is the sister of the heroine from the first book. And this is important because he has been obsessed with her since, like, basically, this is like unrequited love from the jump in the first book. You don't have to read the first book, but it's sweet. So basically, like, he's very sweet. He's like he's a construction worker, I think. And he is like he's not that smart. Like, this is the reason why I recommend him, because like, he's like on the page as being like not very smart. He didn't like do very well in school. He like doesn't really, He's just like, that's none of that world. Like, there's nothing intellectual that really like inspires him. He comes home, he like plays video games. He goes to work. He like, you know, mm-hmm. builds houses, but he's not like the head of the construction company. He's just like a dude.
Yeah.
But he's really very sweet. And Ashley, the heroine, has been like dating and has had just like bad relationship after bad relationship. And she really wants to like, she really knows she wants to be a mom. She wants to settle down. She wants to have a family. And so she's decided that she's going, like, she's basically like, I want to get a sperm donor and do this. And, but like, she doesn't, but it's expensive to do that. And she has this other guy in her life who's like a very wealthy doctor who is like, I also want to have a child, but I don't want to have like a full, I don't want to have a relationship. I don't want to have like a full-time thing. Mm-hmm. So what if I give you, what if I give you sperm, you have the baby, and then we share custody and I'll pay for like the baby stuff. And she's okay. Like, okay, well, that seems like the best like of both worlds in a lot of ways. Except Dean, the hero of this book, is like, wait a second, you can't have a baby with a hot doctor. Like, what if it all ends the way this ends in rom-coms?
Yeah.
Like, what about me? I could also be a sperm donor. And like, I work and I like have money and let me help you. And he's like so eager, but really he's just like, I just want to like make you happy.
Yeah.
And he like chases along behind her, and she's basically like, she's like, Dean, you are hot empirically.
Yeah.
And like, maybe we could just like scratch this itch for a little while until like I'm ovulating or whatever. Like, right. I forget the setup, but it's basically like,
yeah,
you know, yeah, okay, but then I'm going to get serious and like have a baby with this doctor. And of course, it all goes from there. But he is a goofball and like a kind of textbook himbo and like very sweet.
So I have two more. I just want to name drop. These are not books I've read, but they were mentioned several times in the Discord by people who thought they would be good himbo recs. They are both male. One is called Himbo by Emily Sanders. I mean, name is destiny right in the title there. That's a rec from Brianna. And then Amanda talked about Time to Shine by Rachel Reed, who a lot of people love Rachel Reed books. And I have just not read this one as being another book that has a great himbo character. So
I also would name check if you're looking for MM himbos, because, you know, Jen talked about one, but we, you know, we sort of vaguely mentioned this. Glitterland by Alexis Hall mm-hmm. is, I think, Darian in that book is a like very solid himbo vibe.
So yeah, there you go. I mean, we thought we wouldn't be able to do it, and here we are 90 minutes later, himboed out.
Long episode. Everyone, I'm Sarah McLean. I'm here with my friend, Jen Prokop. We are Faded Mates. You can find us online at fadedmates.net. You can find us on Twitter at Faded Mates, on Instagram at Faded Mates Pod, also at Threads and Blue Sky. You can join our Patreon if, like Jen said, you were just really looking for a rushing river of romance discussion all day long, all week long, all year long, forever. You can do that at fadedmates.net/Patreon. You can, or if you would like this in real life, this yes. kind of chaotic energy, just in a hole with a room full of other people, join us at Faded Mates on March 23rd, 2024 in Brooklyn, New York, at the William Vale Hotel. We will be there with Kate Claiborne and Nikki Payne and Lauren Billings, one half of Christina Lauren. And you can get tickets to that at fadedmates.net/live. Forget anything, Jen?
I can't imagine what you could have possibly forgotten. Oh, I do. I remember. Everybody, in special podcasting apps, as we talk about books, if you click on the chapter title, you will be taken right to a link to buy that book. So we are trying to make this the full experience for you.
No himbos here.
It doesn't just work with ads. It also works with chapter titles.
How amazing. Look at us. All right.
Have a great week. I'm ready to go watch Ghostbusters.
Oh, yeah. Do yourself a favor. Do that. Okay. Bye.
Bye.